Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sister Simone Campbell, the Executive Director of NETWRC, a Catholic social justice lobby. She was singled out for criticism by the previous Pope for what the Vatican believed to be the promoting of radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith, specifically NETWRC's ties to the Leadership Conference of Women Religious and its support for President Obama's healthcare reform push, as well as its failure to promote church teaching on abortion, contraception, homosexuality, and the male-only priesthood. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sister Simone Campbell.
Glad to be with you, Ian.
And the Pope, in an interview with an Italian Jesuit journal, translated and reprinted in the Jesuit Journal America here in the United States, has obviously shaken up. It hasn't changed the church doctrine, but it certainly changed the conversation, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. What a delight to read of the Pope's insight. And I think one of the things that struck me most deeply about the interview as it's published is you really get a view into his spirituality, that he knows that each individual is made in the dignity of God, as we say, and that that dignity then gets carried out in each person's journey. And he's so empathetic with each person's journey. I just found it really uplifting.
And when he said the church sometimes has locked herself up in small things and small-minded rules, ministers of the church must be ministers of mercy above all. Is that a call to get people out of their palaces, the cardinals and others, into the pastoral work of the church?
Well, I think that he's really challenging leadership to move away from this rule-driven righteousness, this certitude that small rules can provide into the complexity of modern life. And certainly his life is an example of the greater simplicity of a sense of engagement of people that the Pope calls people on his cell phone. I love it, because what it says is that he knows he needs to be around people and that it's in community. I mean, he spoke really passionately about his need for community, his need to be part of the group, to be supported. And I think his way is to welcome all into that community and then to journey together. He's challenging others to do likewise.
And in terms of giving up the limousine, not staying in the Vatican, staying in a much, much more humble quarters, in general, he seems to be setting a real tone here, but most of all, when he talks about the church's obsession with gay marriage, abortion, and contraception, right. You, of course, were pulled over by the previous Pope over those very, you know, in fact, the Pope said in the interview, he said, you know, a lot of people have been pressuring me to talk about abortion, you know, and when he did,
yes.
Boy, did he surprise people.
Absolutely. But I think his point is that it's a question of balance. As you say, he didn't change any of the church's teaching, but what he said is this is not the only focus, that there is so much more life in the gospel than this obsession. And quite frankly, it is pretty ironic that the very thing that we got criticized for, he himself is doing. It makes me think. It just kind of makes me laugh, because eventually good news comes around, so I'm thoroughly enjoying it at this point.
And again, I'm speaking with Sister Simone Campbell, the Executive Director of NETWRC, a Catholic Social Justice Lobby. She was singled out for criticism by the previous Pope for what the Vatican believed to be the promoting of radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith, specifically NETWRC's ties to the Leadership Conference of Women Religious and its support for President Obama's healthcare reform push, as well as its failure to promote church teachings on abortion, contraception, homosexuality, and the male-only priesthood. Now, obviously, some of the cardinals, in fact, there was I think the previous Pope put a cardinal in charge of looking into your organization and into the Leadership Conference of Women Religious. How are the Cardinal Dolans and the conservatives who really openly supported the Republicans in 2012, and it's worth noting that you spoke at the Democratic Convention, have they been undercut by the Pope's words? I mean, after all, the Pope said, I'm not a right-winger. I've never been a right-winger.
Right. And that he's calling on all of the church leaders to be about balance and not about obsession. I think that there is a change that is happening. For instance, Bishop Tobin up in Providence, Rhode Island, had issued in his own diocesan newspaper a statement, I think it was 2 weeks ago, saying that he was very disappointed in Pope Francis because Pope Francis hadn't spoken on these things and it was very important that he speak on it.
Well, on abortion specifically, said,
I'm not going to. So
right.
I think that that is shaking up some of the leadership. The hard part for our leadership, though, is that they have not, for the most part, they have never really had pastoral experience. The John Paul II and Pope Benedict only appointed bishops who had a maximum of 5 years of pastoral work. And if you haven't walked with people who struggle, and that's what Pope Francis has done in his life, he walked with people who struggled. And when you do that, your heart's broken open, it changes your perspective. And so our bishops are sort of crippled by their lack of experience. And when we were on our doing our Nuns on the Bus trip, I kept inviting people to come and meet our people because it is meeting people who struggle that open your heart to the deeper message of the gospel.
So is it possible that the cardinals who chose this pope may have buyer's remorse?
That definitely is a possibility. But you know what? From my perspective, as a person of faith, the Holy Spirit is alive and well, and this is such a gift of fresh air, much needed in the church. The whole idea that Pope Francis doesn't want this smaller, purer, sanctimonious church, but rather wants all of us struggling. In fact, he called on everyone, all of us, to make a mess. Be prophetic, make a mess, be audacious. In one of the lines in the interview I just love, he says, "You cannot bring the frontier home. Rather, you have to live on the borders and be audacious." I thought, isn't that fabulous? It's fantastic.
So how does this translate into what we're seeing now? You've had this tectonic shift in the tone in the Catholic Church, and you've struggled to help implement President Obama's so-called Obamacare, and now it's been defunded or for the 42nd time by the Congress, and now they're really going to the mat over it. Is there any chance that the Pope's words are going to echo into the House chamber here, and the Congressman Ryan and others who of the Catholic faith will be listening? Because this is an extraordinary irony that we have this, what you call this breath of fresh air coming out of the Vatican, and then we have this stale, poisonous acrimony coming out of the House of Representatives.
Exactly. And both John Boehner and Paul Ryan, I mean, they are practicing Catholics, and it matters to them. And I don't know what's going to happen. A lot of this is about the political game of trying to let House Republicans who are going to face re-election in 2014 look as far right as possible so they don't get challenged by Tea Party types in the primaries. I mean, that's what this is about. It's an election politics, I think. And the fact is that, I mean, even though they voted 42 times, I think it is, to defund Obamacare, that's not going anyplace. It's not happening. This Obamacare is a huge step forward for our nation. Business wants it. Labor wants it. Ordinary people want it. So it's going to happen. But the politics of it for the House is that they don't want to, they want to be able to show that they stood up and opposed it for other electioneering issues. So I think in the end, it's going to happen, but unfortunately, I don't think it's because the politicians are going to listen to the Pope at this point. I think they're just going to listen to the polls and to the reality that we cannot leave our nation in such disarray as they would want to do. So in the end, I think rationality will win out. I'm not sure faith will.
But surely you've got some very powerful financiers behind the Tea Party caucus who are pushing this. And they're in safe seats. And not only are they in safe seats, they've got the Koch brothers' money and the Club for Growth money behind them. And it would seem that one of the things I find extraordinary about the Democrats being somewhat on the ropes over this when they have a strong hand is, for example, Eric Cantor, the majority House Majority Leader, says, "Let's defund this law now and protect the American people from the economic calamity that we know Obamacare will create." I don't understand why the White House doesn't turn those words around and say, because we know what the real motive here on the part of the House Republicans and their backers, and Pelosi referred to their backers in the insurance companies, is that they are afraid that this thing's going to work and the American people are going to love it.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be really bad for them over the long haul. So I don't understand why the president doesn't turn their words around and say, okay, if you guys feel that this thing is going to be such a calamity, why don't you let it go ahead and go into law? And then if it crashes and burns, as you say it will, then you guys are going to be heroes, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things is that I know that the president's staff is trying to do is to not engage on their message, but rather to maintain the positive message. And it may come to what you're saying. I mean, it seems kind of obvious to me, too. But the fact is that they're working really hard not to have their agenda thrown off by this right-wing, what I consider slightly nutty activity, the politicking part of it, but rather stay focused on the substance. And I can admire that in a way. On the other hand, I just wish he'd put it out there the way you say. It could help.
Well, I get stuff all the time from very conservative groups, from the Koch brothers, many fronts. The latest one is Generation Opportunity, which is a youth group that they've quite literally paid for that is encouraging college kids not to sign up for Obamacare. And if these activities work, you know, the whole thing is predicated upon the broadening up the pool. So everybody has to join Obamacare starting in October in order for the pool to be big and therefore the prices to go down. So you can't deny, I think, Sister Simone Campbell, that they're out to sabotage it. They're doing what they can to...
Right. Well, but part of it's optics. Part of it is just to look like they're sabotaging it. Because as I've gone around the country, I've spoken at a lot of colleges and universities, and I've sort of asked the question, most of the kids that are in colleges and university are on their parents' health insurance. So because they can now stay on their health insurance until they're 26 because of the Affordable Care Act, so there's not a large pool of college students who are uninsured. It is the ones between 26 it's the folks from lower economic strata, that's true, or it's the folks from 26 to about 35 that are the largest pool of uninsured. But as I understand it, the Koch brothers have been looking, and this program has been looking at college students, which is more optics than reality.
So you think this is more about shoring up their morale almost in terms of fighting the good fight for the very right-wing constituents of these very right-wing politicians?
Well, maybe it's because I'm a person of faith, so I always think good things are going to happen. I have hope. But, I don't see the substance in this one. If they were working at rallying the working poor, which they're not, then I think that's more of a concern, because those are the folks that are going to get the subsidies, the sliding scale, reimbursements, those kinds of things. So I think, and there's also the people that don't know about insurance, how to sign up. It's going to be we have a big task ahead of us to get the uninsured enrolled, but it's not college students that are the uninsured.
So, Sister Simone Campbell, just back to the Pope's words in the last couple of minutes here. The Pope Francis did reject the ordination of women to the priesthood, but however, he did indicate that he wants the church to do a better job in hearing women's voices. Quoting the Pope, "Women are asking deep questions that must be addressed. The church cannot be herself without the woman and her role." What do you take from that?
Hope still lives quite well within the church on the issue of women. I mean, earlier he had said that we need a deep theology of women, and, well, I think we need some theology of men also if we're going to do that. But the irony is that there is a whole body of theological reflection done by women. I think he's just not aware of it. So I have some theologian friends who are in the process of getting their writings, their materials to the Vatican so that he can read it and see what we think. There's actually quite a bit of work that has been done. And I think his point is that he said change doesn't happen quickly. Also, he said change takes time, and that he's slowly opening doors that will eventually join the 21st century. I hold out hope on this one.
But the broader point, I guess, that the Pope wants the church to be less judgmental and more pastoral, that could, in fact, yes, be a revolution in a way. I mean, given that
absolutely.
The last two popes...
Absolutely. That, and it's actually, in as many ways, returned to the roots that we are in relationship with people who struggle. And quite frankly, the way our teachings, the Hebrew and Christian scriptures, everything points to walking with those who struggle. Just yesterday, I was doing a workshop, and we were talking about the way forward is to touch the pain of people. Come to people with empty hands and receive their story. Hold them. And if you do that, if you receive people's stories, then what you have released hope because we're connected. It's about community. And that's the big change that I think is happening.
Well, just in closing, Sister Simone Campbell, for the more secular amongst our listeners, I was very impressed that the Pope's favorite movie is Federico Fellini's La Strada, which is one of the...
Wasn't that fabulous? That
was one of my favorite movies, yeah. Yeah. So you agree with him as a film critic then?
Well, I'm not exactly a film critic, but I think it's a fabulous film. But it sounds like he's seen a lot more films than I have. But his analysis I thought was great. So, and I was glad. It seemed like in the interview he brought it up himself because he was talking culture beforehand and talking opera and, you know, symphonies. And then he said, well, we need to include the film. And I thought, oh, that's great. There's a 21st century idea.
And I'm speaking to you from Hollywood.
How fabulous.
Well, Sister Simone Campbell, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
It's an honor to be with you, Ian. Thank you so much.
Again, I've been speaking with Sister Simone Campbell, who is Executive Director of Network, a Catholic social justice lobby. She was singled out for criticism by the previous Pope for what the Vatican believed to be the promoting of radical feminist themes incompatible with the Catholic faith, specifically Network's ties to the Leadership Conference of Women Religious and its support for President Obama's healthcare reform push, as well as its failure to promote church teaching on abortion, contraception, homosexuality, and the male-only priesthood. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Michael Scherzer. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.